Recently, there's been uncertainty in both Europe and the United States relating to the patentability of biological products and processes. In Europe, some of these issues revolving around the patentability of plants and biological processes for producing plants have been resolved. However, in the United States, the position is still unsettled. Finnegan attorneys Hazel Ford and Carla Muda join us now to discuss the different approaches to the patentability of plants taken by the European Patent Office and the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Hazel, can you tell us about the European Patent Office's position on plant patentability?
The situation in the US is obviously different to how it is in Europe. In Europe, there's no general problem with patenting either biological processes or naturally occurring biological products. The EPO will treat these cases the same as they would any other case, and they'll base their decision on patentability on the normal tests of things like novelty and inventive step. However, there is a specific exception to patentability in Europe that relates to essentially biological processes for making plants. The highest court of the European Patent Office, which is the Enlarged Board of Appeal, has now made two separate decisions clarifying this particular point of law. Both of these decisions were based on the same two patent applications, which are known as the broccoli and the tomato cases. The first of these decisions came out in 2010, and in that decision, the Enlarged Board looked at processes for producing plants, where the process is based on natural crossing of plants and then selecting the progeny plants of interest. They concluded that these are essentially biological processes and so are excluded from patentability in Europe. And they said that this was the case even if the claim includes extra technical steps that enable or assist the performance of the process. So, for example, in the broccoli case, there were some extra steps to do with identifying and selecting particular molecular markers in the plants. And the Enlarged Board said that that wasn't enough to overcome the problem to actually make it patentable. The second case came out in March 2015, and in this case, the Enlarged Board looked at the product claims of the broccoli and tomato cases, and these claims were directed either to the plants themselves or to parts of the plants like the actual tomatoes. The question that they considered here was whether the plants themselves were patentable if the only way you can make those plants was an unpatentable, essentially biological process of the type that they discussed in their first decision. The good news for patentees is that the Enlarged Board concluded that the exclusion of essentially biological processes should only apply to process claims. So a claim to a product can't fall within that exclusion, even if the product could only have been produced by an excluded process. The same also applies to a product-by-process claim, where the process of production is specifically set out in the claim. The general conclusion was that as long as the claim is directed to a product, then this issue just doesn't apply to that claim. So overall, these two decisions from the Enlarged Board mean that the exclusion for essentially biological processes in Europe is narrowly applied, in that it does only apply to process claims, but it may cause real problems for those process claims, because if you have a process that involves natural crossing of plants and then selection, that can't be made patentable in Europe just by adding extra technical steps to the claim.
Carla, how does this compare with the situation in the United States?
Well, in the United States, the question of patent eligibility appears to have changed quite dramatically over the past few years. And this has been particularly since the Prometheus v. Mayo decision in 2012, and more recently in 2014 with Alice v. CLS Bank. Because of both of these decisions and many other decisions that are recent and old, the USPTO issued so-called interim guidance on patent eligibility, and this guidance has set forth a serious threshold for patent prosecutors. So both in the diagnostics and nature-based products, the key to patent eligibility is now the presence of significantly more in either the claim process or the composition of matter in relation to the judicial exception that the claim is allegedly related to. So under this test of significantly more, what has happened is diagnostic methods and other uses of so-called biomarkers, which are the subject of hundreds, if not thousands, of previously awarded patents, have suddenly become ineligible for patenting. And this situation is a shift that has come at a particularly bad time, because this is precisely when both science and medicine have turned to personalize medicine for dramatic improvement in the treatment of a variety of diseases, including cancers and many other genetic disorders. Many of the discoveries in this area involve gene-based clinically monitoring protocols that are no longer patentable in the United States. Interestingly, this comes as a surprise for a large number of Europeans, many of whom have built entire industries surrounding biomarker discovery. In addition to the diagnostic problems, there is another area that has experienced a major shift has been that of nature-based products. For example, no longer one can rely on qualifiers such as isolated and purified to patent therapeutic proteins or industrial yeast or bacterial strains that are nature-based, whereas this was common practice in the past. In fact, unless these things have markedly different structural or functional characteristics relative to the natural counterparts, those products are now ineligible for patenting. So the question and the shift patentability problem now lies on identifying what can be incorporated into the claimed nature-based invention, either a product or a diagnostic, that confers significantly more than the nature-based counterpart or judicial exception. And so when put through the courts, very few inventions have met this requirement, and many people patiently await decisions such as that in the Ariosavir Sequinom case for additional guidance from the Federal Circuit. Until then, it seems that the situation has become very difficult for two major industries, not only in the United States, but throughout the world.
And from both of your perspectives, now we'll start with Hazel. Do you see the approaches in Europe and the U.S. getting closer or further apart in the future?
In Europe, there are only a small number of exceptions to patentability, and generally the EPO applies them quite narrowly. I wouldn't expect the EPO to start following the USPTO's approach in this area. For example, the law in Europe explicitly allows for the patenting of naturally occurring biological products, which is very different to the approach that's now being taken under Section 101 in the United States. Overall, it seems to me that the approaches of the two offices are actually moving further apart rather than closer together, and I don't see any real signs that either office plans to harmonize with the other one in this area.
And I will say that contrary to Europe, there are many other countries in the world that follow this so-called new U.S. approach. And more importantly, if one actually reads both the court's decisions and the USPTO's rationale set forth in their interim guidance, it would appear that the law was always this way in the United States, and that what happened was only that the USPTO has been making a mistake in allowing patents in the natural product areas that should not have been allowed. So if this is in fact has been the law, and the only issue has been that it hasn't been questioned in the court until these recent cases, then I really don't see a change in U.S. law being very forthcoming.
Our guests have been Hazel Ford and Carla Muda, attorneys at Finnegan, one of the largest IP law firms in the world. For more commentary on intellectual property news and issues, to listen to other podcasts, and to receive additional information on the firm, please visit www.finnegan.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Finnegan.